Mizbeach have to be avonim, stones, which haven't been smoothed out, haven't been chiseled out in a nice manner, but they have to be natural. Whichever way you find them in the ground, take them out and use them to build the Mizbeach. Because if you're going to use a stone that has been shaped, or a stone which has been smoothed out, that means ki charbecha heinafta aleha. That means you used a sword or a cutting instrument in order to shape the stone. Vatechaleleha. And if you did that, then you will mechalel the stone. You desecrated the stone. In other words, the halacha is that the Mizbeach has to be built from stones that were never worked upon, they were never smoothed out, they were never formed, they were never shaped. They have to retain their original form. Whatever is the natural look of the stone, that's the stone that has to be used in the Mizbeach. And one has to think for a moment why the Torah should come up with such a strange halacha that you can't build the Mizbeach from a stone which is shaped. Obviously, if you're going to work on the stone and you're going to cut the stone that it should be a perfect square, then your end result of a Mizbeach built from such stones is going to be much nicer than a Mizbeach which is built from odd-shaped stones, each one in its natural form. So why is it that the Torah was machayev that you shouldn't do that? In the entirety of the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, we see there's an emphasis of Zekeli V'Amvehu. There's an emphasis of making it beautiful. The Rambam paskens that there's a special halacha. The Rambam says that the halacha of Hidden Mitzvah, the halacha of Zekeli V'Amvehu, when he quotes examples, one of the examples that Rambam uses in reference to the Beis HaMikdash and the Klei HaMikdash, that the Beis HaMikdash and the Klei HaMikdash have to be of a beautiful external form. The more, the nicer they are, the more beautiful they are, the more you mekayim the din of Zekeli V'Amvehu. So why is it that all of a sudden when it comes to the Mizbeach, the Torah tells us that the opposite is true? And obviously there must be some theme here. Obviously there must be some rationale here. Obviously there must be some message here. Torah, as we keep on saying, is Miloshon Hayra. It's trying to teach us something. And in fact, the Torah repeats this twice. Because we find in Sefer Dvarim, this halacha is repeated. Parshas Kisavoy. Avonim shleimos tivne es hamizbeach. The Mizbeach has to be built from an avonim shleimos. And avonim shleimos, in the context that the pasuk is talking about, again, means stones in their natural form, not stones which have been shaped. The Gemara in Chagiga on Daf Kav Zayin Amud Aleph says, Bizman shebeis hamikdosh hayokayim. At the point in time when the Beis HaMikdash existed, Mizbeach Mechaper. The Mizbeach was Mechaper. In other words, the symbolism of the Mizbeach, that which the Mizbeach represents, is Kapara. In other words, the process of Tshuva. The process of tshuva, which results in kapara. Kapara meaning wiping away the chet. Removing the einish for a chet. And the process of tshuva involves a number of components. It involves regret, it involves harata, it involves an acceptance upon oneself that in the future one will act differently, kabbalah al-asid. And in the main, it involves vidui. The major component of tshuva is vidui. To the degree that the mitzvah of tshuva, as it appears in the Rambam, doesn't appear even in the form of a mitzvah to do tshuva. It appears in the form of a mitzvah to be mitzvada. And vidui is the main component of the act of tshuva. Many korbanos, many sacrifices were brought on the Mizbeach. But the Mishnah, first Mishnah in the fifth perek of Zvachim, when talking about the different korbanos that are brought on the Mizbeach, emphasizes the point that the two most sanctified korbanos that are brought on the Mizbeach are a chatos and an osham. Both the chatos and the osham, which are korbanos, which are brought on the Mizbeach because of chet, because a person transgressed a chet. And when a person brings a chatos or an osham, when a person brings a korban, and he offers up a korban on the Mizbeach in order to be makriv a korban because of a chet, there is a halacha which we learn out from the pasuk, v'chiper ba'adoi u'ba'ad ba'isoi, that he has to be mitzvada. There's vidui when you bring the korban. And in fact, the Gemara in Yuma says that the kapara which is achieved through a person bringing a korban, how is it achieved? Says the Gemara in Yuma, kapara, the kapara of a korban is in essence zu kaparas dvorim. It's a kapara which comes about through the fact that the individual, when he brings the korban, says vidui. So vidui, confession, that's the ikka kapara which exists when a person brings a korban. There is a tefillah, which those of us who daven say it every day. But like the rest of the tefillahs that we say every day, we read it without really understanding what we're saying. There's a tefillah which we say every morning. A Jew gets up in the morning and he says a tefillah. What does he say? He says, Elokai. Ribbono shel Olam. Hello. Ribbono shel Olam. I'm talking to you. Neshama. Shenasata bi. The neshama that you gave me. Taherahi. He's Taher. Who is he trying to fool? Who is the Jew when he gets up in the morning and he says, Elokai neshama shenasata bi Tahira, trying to fool? The Rebbeinu Shlomo knows the emes. Most of us aren't toher at all. Far from it. The Jew who does averis isn't toher. The Jew who does averis is tomei, from every single aspect. And the Rebbeinu Shlomo knows exactly what each and every one of us did the day previously, and in fact during the night previously, before we get up in the morning and say, Elokai neshama shenasata bi tahirahi. So what do we do? Trying to put a fast one in the Rebbeinu shel Olam? So in order to understand what we're actually saying every morning, one has to understand what is the build, what is the makeup of the spiritual personality that is defined by the Torah as being man. The physical definition of man, we know. The question is, what's the spiritual definition of man? How does the Torah view the essence of a Jew from a spiritual perspective. To which the Zohar says in Parshas Mishpatim that the spiritual makeup of a Jew is three components. The entire spiritual personality of a Jew consists of three independent components. What are these three independent components? Says the Zohar, the first one is called Nefesh. What does Nefesh mean? What is it? What is this first component? Says the Zohar, this refers to the Jew who, as a human being, is by definition a member of the animal world, which means that he has the ability to do physical acts and that he is a living being. Exactly the same as an animal, is a living being and has the ability to do physical acts. And continues the Zohar, in exactly the same way as any member of the animal world, because it's a living creature that has the ability to do physical acts, does these physical acts because of a basic instinct that he has. Therefore, the Jew will also, as part of the human race, which is part of the animal world, do physical acts as a result of basic instincts that he has. And any act that is done as a result of a basic animal instinct that exists within the human being because he is part and parcel of the animal world, is defined in its broader sense by a general term called nefesh. And that's the first component that exists in the spiritual makeup of a Jew. The second component, says the Zohar, is something which is called Ruach. Ruach is an abstract term. It's a nebulous term. That's why it's used for a variety of ideas and concepts which are empty. Empty meaning abstract. That's why a strong wind which is blowing is called a ruach. That's why the spirit of things is called in Hebrew ruach, because it's abstract. You can't touch the spirit of things. And that's why, and it was translated in the English language, somebody who talks non-stop, but there's no content to his speech, is called a windbag. Ruach, in Hebrew as well, in modern day Hebrew you also say, he's full of ruach. Untranslatable. Therefore, says the Zohar, ruach represents two aspects of the human personality which are abstract. Emotions and intellect. Until the New Age came, and New Age philosophy became the in thing, there was no such thing as touching your emotions. Right? It's a meaningless Americanism, like most of the American language. Intellect is something which is abstract. Power of thought. The power of processing thought. That abstract idea, which is so abstract that it's so far removed from all of you, the ability to think. That's all abstract. That's ruach. And the third component, says the Zohar, in Parshas Mishpatim, is something which is called neshama. Neshama, says the Zohar, is the hidden essence of every single Jew, which cannot be defined in words. It's not something which you can communicate. It doesn't communicate with other people, and you can't communicate about it to other people. And therefore, it's something which is basically mute. It's something which is inaccessible. You can't communicate with a neshama. Never mind what Breslov tells you. You cannot communicate with the neshama. There's no way of communicating, because it's the language of the Zohar, it's Tomir V'ne'elam. It's hidden. It's the essence of the Jew. It's the core of the Jew. The Torah believes that the Jew in his essence is toiv. The Jew in his essence is well-meaning. The Jew in his essence is good. The Jew in his essence is goodness. Irrespective of whatever acts he does. And that is basically the whole basis for the concept of tshuva, which was such a difficult topic for non-Jewish philosophers to understand, and therefore most of them denied the possibility of it. The concept of tshuva is based on the fact that in essence the Jew is toiv. And any ra that the Jew does is basically external. If one understands the spiritual makeup of the Jew, then one understands tshuva very clearly. There is something within the makeup of the personality of the Jew which it is impossible to damage in any way. It's impossible to be pagan in it. It's impossible to do anything to actually create any damage of any permanent basis inside the spiritual personality of the Jew. Even the ultimate sinner, the ultimate criminal, has something inside him which is untouchable, which is not affected in the slightest by anything that he does. When a person does a chet, the nefesh is affected. The ruach can be corrupted. One's emotions can be corrupted. One can be using one's emotions in the wrong direction. One's intellect can be corrupted. One can use one's thought process in the wrong direction. But the third component, the essence of the Jew, what in the Sifrei Chassidus is called the Chelek Elokeinu Mima'al, the spark of divinity, whatever that means, or however you define that, which exists within the Jew, that's untouchable. And that's what a Jew declares every single morning when he gets up. Every Jew, every morning when he gets up, he makes a phone call. He makes a phone call to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, hi. Elokai. That's dialing the number. And he makes a statement. And he says, Neshomo Shinasata Bi. That third component, the Neshomo Shinasata Bi, whatever I did yesterday, and whatever I did the day before, that Neshomo is untouchable. That doesn't change. And therefore, I have the ability, and that's what we're saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I have the ability to do tshuva. Because that neshama, that's the mahus, that's the essence. The nefesh and the ruach, that exists elsewhere as well. It exists in the animal world in general, it exists by goyim, right? They also have thought processes. They also have emotions. They also do physical acts which are based on instinctive reaction. But I have something which nobody else has. Ribbono Shel Olam. I have a neshama. And that neshama can be ma'orer a person to do tshuva. And it gives him the ability that if he goes through the required process that the Torah demands of him, which is the process of tshuva, it wipes away, it's machape, it wipes away the external acts that the person does, and it recreates the Jew in his pristine form from his neshama. If you look in Malachim Aleph, in Perek Ches, which is the Perek which deals with the description of Shlomo HaMelech and the Chanukas Abayis of the Beis HaMikdash HaRishon, you will see very clearly that when Shlomo HaMelech talks about the Mizbeach, he says that the Mizbeach represents Cheshbon HaNefesh. The Mizbeach represents a person making an accounting to himself. Because vidui, which as we said is the essence of the Mizbeach, tshuva, vidui, is basically taking stock of oneself. Where am I at? Where am I holding? When a person says vidui and he gets up and he says chotosi, and you look in the English translations, all of them, without exception, mistranslate the word. Because they all translate chotosi in its Christian sense. Father, I have sinned. $100 and 3 Hail Marys and everything will be fine. Chotosi doesn't mean I have sinned. The word chet, the root of the word chet, has a different meaning altogether. Chet is used in other contexts as well. The pasuk uses the word chet, if you remember the story of Yonason, Dovra Melech and Yonason, the sign, shooting the arrows, the deal they made between them. And the pasuk says, if you miss the target, how does the pasuk phrase? If you miss the target when you shoot the arrow, asher yechte es hamator. Yechte means to deviate. Yechte means to miss the target. Yes. Chet means failure. Chet means bankruptcy. Chet means I missed the boat. What the Stalinist communists used to call, they never spoke about people who did the wrong thing. Everybody was a Leninist deviationist. Because chet means to deviate. Take the wrong turn. not getting to where you should have got to. That's what chet's all about. And when a Jew stands up and he says vidui, and the opening words he say in the vidui is, I missed the boat. I took a wrong turn. I missed the target. There was a target set for me, and I missed that target. And the essence of vidui, the essence of cheshbon ha-nefesh, is honesty. One can't stand in front of the Ribbono shel Olam and justify oneself. You can't stand in front of the Ribbono shel Olam and say, Chatosi, but you don't know where I'm coming from. You don't know what I'm all about. If you, Ribbono shel Olam, would know what my psychologist told me last night, you'd understand. That's not vidui. That's not cheshbon ha-nefesh. That's a direct, inherent contradiction to vidui and to cheshbon ha-nefesh. The minute a person starts justifying things, that's not vidui and that's not cheshbon ha-nefesh. Vidui is pshat, don't look for excuses. Don't try and be melamed zchus on yourself. There's somebody else who can do that much better than you can. The Ribbono shel Olam. Don't try to answer what you did. Don't rationalize. Rationalization is a contradiction to cheshbon ha-nefesh and is a contradiction to vidui. And it makes the vidui worthless. And it makes the cheshbon ha-nefesh worthless. Vidui is very simply self-guilt. Admitting I am guilty. That's what vidui is all about. And a person has to have, to be able to say vidui, the inner strength, the guts, to be able to get up and say, I am guilty. I have no excuses. I have no rationalizations. But that doesn't mean it's all over. Alakai, neshama shenasata bi tahirihi. The mizbeach, which was the symbol of kapara, the symbol of vidui, had to be built from natural stones. The way it is. The reality of the stones. No smoothing out of the corners. No smoothing out of the wrinkles. We're not shaping it into symmetry that it should look nice. It doesn't look nice and it isn't nice. So what? That's the truth. It's the emes. The emes isn't always nice. A stone which is artificially created, a stone which is rationalized, that it should fit perfect proportions, a stone which justifies it being in this exact position, doesn't make sense in a mizbeach. You lose the whole point of the mizbeach. The mizbeach was a mirror. The mizbeach was a place where a person came and he looked at it and he saw himself. It's natural. It's the way that it is. When I stand here in front of this mizbeach and I am being mizvada to the Ribbono shel Olam, I'm being mizvada to the Ribbono shel Olam the way I am. Who I am and what I am. I'm not passing over myself any knife of any way which is cutting things up that it should appear nice and rationalized and justified. There was no cherev involved. That's what the Torah is telling us. When the Torah comes along and the Torah gives the halacha of Talmud Torah, the Torah makes a demand on a person which is seemingly impossible to fulfill. The Torah tells us that a person is required to learn Torah at any point in time, every minute, etc., etc., etc. And we don't have to go into it. You've heard many times it's been spoken about. And the question is it legitimate to ask a person to be able to do that? And the Torah answers the question. And the Torah says that I have a right to ask it from you, says the Torah. Because once upon a time, you were slaves to Paro in Mitzrayim. And when Paro wanted, that's when you went to bed. And when Paro wanted, that's when you got up. And when Paro wanted, that's what you did. You were totally, completely committed to the wish and the whim of Paro. And then Lahavdil, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, I took you out of Mitzrayim. But I gave you a new avdus. And the avdus is an avdus to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And now you are a eved to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And by Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kabbalas HaTorah, Klal Yisrael became a cheftza of avodim to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I've mentioned before, and I'll repeat it again. There is a very interesting halacha which appears in Maseches Bava Metzia. And the halacha states as following. When a worker is hired on an hourly or on a daily basis, he has the right to throw the towel in the middle and to turn around to the guy who hired him and say, I've changed my mind, I'm not going to carry on working for you. The Gemara in Bav Metzia and Daf Yud Amud Aleph. And the Gemara in Bav Metzia says, why does he have the right to do that? Ki li b'nei Yisrael avodai, avodim, avodai heim, asher tzeitzios ha-meretz Mitzrayim. The worker has no right to be meshabed himself totally and completely without any recourse from doing that work because he's already meshubed. He already has a boss who he's working for. And that is the Ribbono Shel Olam. However, if you hire a worker not on an hourly, daily basis, but you hire the worker to finish and to do a certain job, he is not allowed to retract in the middle. And you don't have to be too much of a lamdan to understand the difference. When you hire someone to do a job, what are you selling? You're selling the job. Meaning you're selling the product. You hire a guy, and the way at which the deal is made is that he has to re-roof your house, then basically what he's selling you is re-roofing a house. When you hire a guy on an hourly basis, what he's selling you is his time. His time is already committed. It's committed to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Say Chazal, if a person can get into his head and a person can get into his mind that his time is meshubed to the Ribbono Shel Olam, then he has no problem spending his entire time learning. But somebody who doesn't have that concept in his mind, that his time doesn't belong to him, his time belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam, he's missed the boat, say Chazal. Hechti es ha-matorah. He shot the arrow and missed the target. Because that's the target. The target is that your time belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and therefore anything that you do when your time is not devoted to the Ribbono Shel Olam can be justified and rationalized from today till doomsday. But that's just a sheker. That's just self-justification. That's not cheshbon nefesh. That's not vidu. That's not reality. That's not mizbeach avonim. That's not looking at the metzias the way that it really is. Chaim Brisker used to say two things. He used to say, a gazlan is not a guy who knows how to steal. Because you can have the best method of stealing in the world. But if you go through 120 years without actually doing it, you're not a gazlan. A guy who knows how to dance, but never dances, is not a dancer. A rakedan, person who dances, he's a dancer. The fact that you theoretically know how to dance is irrelevant. The fact that you know how to sing without singing doesn't make you into a star singer. To be a singer, you have to sing. Says Reb Chaim, to know how to learn doesn't make you into a London. A London is a guy who learns. Reb Chaim also said that a masmid is not a guy who learns 18 hours a day. A masmid is a guy who learns 60 minutes of the hour. You can learn 18 hours a day and not be a masmid. You can learn 1 hour a day and be a masmid. It just depends on how many minutes in the hour you're actually learning. One of the most phenomenal geniuses in the history of the last 500 years in Klal Yisrael was Rav Moshe Landinsky, the Rosh Yeshiva of Radin. The man that the Chofetz Chaim brought as the Rosh Yeshiva of Radin when he opened up the Radin Yeshiva. Rav Moshe Landinsky knew the entire Torah, word for word, bal peh. He knew the entire Shas Bavli, Shas Yerushalmi, Medrash, Shulchan Aruch, everything. But he knew it milah by milah. He knew it word by word. He never had to look in a safe. When he was in his last years, he died at a very late age. When he was in his last years and he was blind, he used to learn with his chavrusa. And his chavrusa was sitting with the Gemara and he couldn't see anything at all. He used to correct the chavrusa. He said, you just made a mistake. You missed a word. He was once traveling. And when he used to travel, he used to chaza. So he had a certain seder. If he was going to this place, he chazed Shisha Sidri Mishnah. If he was going to this place, he chazed Shas, this place, Yerushalmi, he had a whole Seder. And he was traveling to a place and he was chazering Mishnayas Baal Peh. And he got stuck. He knew that there was a word here and he couldn't remember what the word was. He remembered the continuation, but there was one word that he couldn't remember. And he was getting very frustrated that he couldn't remember this word. At which point the coach driver, who was a Jew, turned around to him and said, there's a kretschmer here. There's a place here which you can sleep and rest and eat, owned by a Jew. He said, I want to stop here for a couple of hours. Is it okay? So Moshe said, fine. They stopped at this place and he got down from the thing and he walked in and the Jew owned the place and he said to the Jew, you by chance happen to have a Mishnayos? Now in those days, it's not like today. You know, nobody had Shas, nobody had a whole set of things. People had one Gemara, one thing. So the Jew said to him, I have one Mishnayos, no more. That's the only sefer that I have. So he said, what Mishnayos is it? He said, it's Seder Nezikin. So he hugged him and kissed him and said, give me the Mishnayos. And he took the Mishnayos and he said to the wagon driver, you eat and drink, do whatever you want. And he went back to the wagon, he opened up the Mishnayos, and he found the word that he forgot. He started chazering right there. A couple of hours later, the driver came out, went back. When he got back to Radin, he went straight into the Chofetz Chaim. And the Chofetz Chaim was already an older man. The Chofetz Chaim was sitting there. And he said to the Chofetz Chaim, I have to tell you a moifus that happened to me. And the Chafetz Chaim said to him, what was the Maifas? And he told him over the story. He said, can you believe it? He said, I couldn't remember the word. And all of a sudden, completely, Hashgacha Pratis, we stopped at a kretschmer. And Hashgacha Pratis, punkt bav metzia. That was the Mishnayos that the kretschmer had. And I was able to look up the word. He said to the Chafetz Chaim, isn't that a Maifas? And the Chafetz Chaim didn't answer him. And he heard the Chafetz Chaim mumbling to himself. So he leaned over to hear what the Chafetz Chaim was saying. And the Chafetz Chaim kept saying to himself, Reb Meisha, Reb Meisha. Obadotn in Eilam Emes and Itokn Kretschmer. Reb Meisha, Reb Meisha. He says, there in Eilam Emes, when we get there, there's no Kretschmer there, he's got a Mishnah. And then the Chafetz Chaim turned around to him and he said, Ashrei mi shebo lekan v'talmudei b'yodei. When we get up there and we walk in, what are they going to do? They're going to say to us, what have you been doing in your life? Said, I was working, I was this and that. You had a share of day? Yeah. Slept through Dafa Yemi and Sasregan every single day. Four machzairim. I had a six-course meal at four or six Dafa Yemi siyumim. So they're going to say, fine, stop. Bracha, space on Adala. Tomorrow, Rashi, taste for stop. And there's no kretschmer there. You can't turn around to the Chofetz Chaim, to the Beis Din Shemayla and say, I just missed the word. Can you pass me a Gemara Erevin? No, there isn't. Every single individual has a choice in front of him. You can spend your entire life answering yourself. You can spend your entire life justifying yourself. You can spend your entire life cutting corners. You can spend your entire life rationalizing. But that's not vidui, and that's not cheshbon nefesh, and that doesn't allow tshuva in the sense of starting again. Starting again only happens when a person faces the music. Starting again only happens when a person is willing to look at himself, self-introspection, and say to himself, let me look at myself, what I really am, and let's see what we can do about it. And learning doesn't mean walking around knowing how to learn. That's not what learning is about. And learning doesn't mean sitting in the Bais HaMidrash from time A to time B, because that's what I have to do in order to go skiing. And therefore, I'll come at 11 o'clock, because from 11 o'clock until 12:30, I've done my hour and a half. Now, I'll have a 20-minute coffee break, I'll have a 40-minute feed the cat break, I'll have a 30-minute break when I will stand opposite somebody else, he will jump on one leg, I will jump on the other leg, and we will pass the time in ruach activity, intellectual activity, right? That's not what it's all about. Learning means that when you meant to learn, you actually learn the minutes that you're meant to learn.